This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I was in nursing school when 9/11 happened, and it was just such an overwhelming, you know, catastrophic thing in our lives. I did not end up going back. I actually regret it now. But I didn't have the wherewithal to carry on. I was terrified for my son. Anthrax, everything was happening. Terrorism does crazy things to your head. I actually thought there was a chance that someone would piggyback and do something with the kids of the widows. And I mean, this is where your head goes in a crisis situation like that. And, there was even issues with friends of my husband had wanted to take my son to various sporting events and the like. And I was terrified. I eventually had to say, like, that's enough. I can't imagine him being in a stadium and something happening. It just seemed like everything was a target, if you can imagine that. And I still wonder today, you know, given what happened on 9/11 and all the controversy surrounding it, the more I've delved into it, that it's not out of the realm of possibility still that another event, you know, like 9/11 could happen. It turned the tide geopolitically in this country in such a way. We went to two wars. A lot of people profited off of 9/11. And to my way of thinking is, I don't know what the agenda is for whomever is running the show. And we're all blind. We could all be blindsided and find ourselves in another event. And to me, that's frightening. And a lot of it has to do with the lack of transparency. And we found that over and over again when we went into D.C. We found, you know, the four widows that I was amongst, we found each other through... I had a lawyer in town, and he was actually the president of New Jersey Trial Lawyers Association. He kept leaving messages on my phone. He and my husband had coached basketball for the kids together. So I knew him. I didn't know him, you know, very well personally. And he kept leaving messages. And I'm like, I'll call him, you know, eventually. I'm still trying to hope and pray that my son, my husband crawls out of the building somehow. I mean, that's another, you know, avenue you start negotiating with God and anybody who might have the power to manifest that for you. But so eventually I called him, and he, as the president of New Jersey Trial Lawyers, was very keyed into what was happening in D.C. And when I eventually spoke to him, he said, Patty, there's legislation going on in D.C. The airlines came down, 100 lobbyists came down on 9/12 to D.C. to indemnify the airlines and everyone else involved such that, you know, basically they were afraid that we were going to take them down and the victims were going to end up taking down the airlines in some capacity via a lawsuit or what have you. And this was my first foray into anything like that. I had no idea. When the gentleman kept on calling my house, I was like, I don't want to talk to a lawyer. What do I need a lawyer for? You know? And lo and behold, you find out life just spins out of control when there's a lot at stake in D.C. and you're one of the pawns caught in their little web. And that's exactly how I felt. And so via the gentleman that was a lawyer, he knew some other of the victims. We had 5 in my town, over 140 in my county alone. It was 9/11 everywhere you turned. You couldn't escape what happened. Everybody knew somebody. And even just, you know, the immediate deaths in our area, everybody had a fireman or, you know, a policeman, in some way capacity. Everybody was affected by it. It was total mayhem. So the gentleman connected me with one of the widows who was not in my immediate town, but nearby, and that was Kristen Breitweiser. And, you know, he had he said, have that conversation that something's going on in D.C. She was a lawyer, so he thought, you know, she might be able to help some of the victims understand it better. So when I contacted her, I told her what this gentleman had said to me. And, you know, we were terrified. What legislation's going on that we're involved in without even our knowledge? They basically retrofitted the airlines for indemnity, you know, so that we could not sue them. And so, you know, this is horrifying. In the meantime, I've got people who knew my husband coming to my house with their sister-in-laws. Like I said, it was a small bedroom community of kind of like Wall Street, within 45 minutes of Wall Street. And so they're bringing in their sister-in-laws, their sisters, you know, most of the victims were young, up-and-coming men in Wall Street, and they had young families. I was 40. I was one of the, believe it or not, one of the older ones at the time. My son was 11. A lot of them were just starting with, you know, babies and the like. And they came in devastated. And so we started, you know, I started having people come at my house on Sundays so I could kind of manage who was coming in. You know, if you're going to bring somebody, bring them on Sunday and we'll have a conversation. In one way, it was just for victims to connect with each other. Who else do you have this conversation with about the kids and what they're going through? Just, you know, everybody worked for a different company who's still continuing benefits, all of that. I mean, my husband worked for Cantor Fitzgerald. He was on the 105th floor that day. And
his name was John, is that right? And you're 38.
Yes, 38. Yep. I have a picture here. I mean, this is, I don't even know. What do I have? Oh, I have this one picture. It ended up, it was just this crazy story. Last picture I have of my husband. We went to a tennis match at the U.S. Open the weekend before. And this gentleman, I had gone up to use the ladies' room and I'm up there by myself. And this guy keeps chasing, ma'am, lady, miss. And I'm like, what? You know, so he stops me and he says, is this you in the photo? And I'm like, photo. And he says, here. And he just hands me photos. I, you know, use the ladies' room. I go back down to the stadium and we went with friends. And I'm like, here, look at this picture. We're all in it, you know? And they're like, oh, how much did they charge you for this? You know, how did this happen? And I'm like, he didn't charge me anything. He just handed it to me. And they're like, nobody does that. You know, and how did he pick me out? Just running to the ladies' room that this was me in the photo. I'm like, in some ways, I mean, there's nothing on this photo to indicate the photographer, anything, that was just like an angel moment. You know, my last photo of my husband.
Yeah. Okay. So John died on that day you went down with the towers, I can remember I was visiting my girlfriend, and I think we were just watching MTV or something, and her brother came running in saying, "America's under attack, America's under attack," and he quickly switched over to CNN. And at that stage, it was just the first building with the smoke.
That was my husband's building, yeah.
So he was in the first tower.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What were you doing that morning? Can you remember?
It was my day off from nursing school. I was actually folding laundry. I mean, you know, you double down on days you have to do all the other things that you need to get done. My son, I had just already taken my son to school, and my husband called. He called me from a landline at work. I found out afterwards he had forgotten his cell phone in his car. When someone went to the train station to go get his car from me, his cell phone was in there. You know, we still weren't accustomed to having cell phones even at the time, you know. So he called me and he said, "You know what's going on?" And I'm like, "I've got a pair of socks that I'm pairing in my hands."
Wait, hang on. So he phoned you. He phoned you when it happened.
Yep. And I mean, they had already, he and his co-workers had already tried to see, you know, if there was an exit for them. And everything was destroyed. The elevators, the stairwells, they were all blown apart that you could not get through. Believe me, these are a lot of healthy young men. If there was any opportunity for them to get out, they would have gotten out. And the rooftop doors were locked. Now, in 93, I don't know if you recall, they did 28 rescues, I believe, from the rooftop that day. They, the police were the only ones who had helicopters, not the fire department. So a policeman actually rappelled down onto the roof, used an axe, and broke through the door, you know, to allow victims to come up to the rooftop where they started exiting them, you know, taking them off in helicopters that day. Apparently, given the situation on 9/11, the only ones who were allowed to fly were the military. Although there were still planes in the air, most of the policemen had said there wasn't an opportunity for them to land. It was too filled with smoke. And there was one who said he would have done it. He still would have tried. But it didn't happen. So all those above the entry area of whatever happened there, there was no chance for any firemen to get to them. And my husband called to say the floor was filling up with a thick black smoke, and he didn't think that they were going to make it.
And he told you that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, he proceeded to break down. I was going into shock. I could feel it all over my body. And, you know, I told him, because I was trying to comfort him, I didn't know what else to do, that, you know, he was such a good man. He had such faith. And I said, if anyone is ready for this time, it's you. You've got this. You're a good man. You know, it's all I could do. And I tell him I love him. Our son loves him. He was telling me that how much he loved us. I mean, it was such a gift when I look back on it to get that phone call. As painful as it is, and I can still hear his voice, his sob. I mean, how do you know somebody really loves you? Here's someone, he's calling me on his deathbed to tell me that. I mean, it was, you know, so many people didn't get calls, didn't get that final moment with their loved one. And I so am so grateful that I got to speak to him. And I hope I offered him comfort in that time.
Sure, just give me a second, yeah. How old was your son at the time?
11. 11. And they were best buds. I mean, his father was his best friend. He coached everything. The kids used to come to my house and ask if my son John could come out and if Mr. Kasaza could come out and play, because he was like the Pied Piper of the neighborhood.
Was your son with you?
No, he was at school.
At school, okay. So, yeah. I mean, so what happened then? Did you immediately phone the school?
I kept on trying to get somehow the connection died. I don't even know what happened there. So I kept on trying to call back and see if I could get a hold of him. You know, I was more than willing to stay on the phone through the whole time. He could have succumbed. I have no idea. He had bought for his desk, the guys that he works with, these hoods that you wear that filter out a lot of smoke and things like that. Because, you know, people got hurt in 93 and smoke was a big part of it, the inhalation and not being able to breathe back then. So to my way of thinking, as I'm watching all of this unfold, you know, I'm thinking, because I'm seeing people jump at this point. I mean, it's just an awful, awful, ungodly thing that was occurring. And I was terrified for him. I mean, was he watching his coworkers die around him? You know, and if we go to the point of what kind of weaponry was used that day, I mean, there's any number of horror situations that I can well imagine that he might have been experiencing. I mean, did he rip off his hood and just want to succumb to it? You know, I can imagine that they had psyche breakdown from observing what was happening around them to everyone as they, you know, one by one died there. I mean, just horrifying.
Did he say on the phone to you what he thought happened?
He thought bombs were going off in the building.
Okay.
Well, you know, there's a lot of noise going on, you know, on that day. There were diesel tanks in the buildings on different floors, you know, above the basement floors. They had emergency tankers and stuff like that. And, you know, There was just so much going on there that day. I can only imagine. He just thought a bomb had hit his building. He thought he heard another something going off in the building. But, you know, I have no idea exactly what, you know, he just didn't see the plane or anything like that.
Okay, so what do you think happened?
At this point in time, I mean, my husband was never found. He's one of 1,100 people that day that were not found. And then there were, according to the medical examiner's office, 400 more individuals who were only identified via DNA. That's how small whatever it was that they found of these individuals was. I mean, my girlfriend, she buried her husband. She had a shard, about an inch shard of a bone. And that's all she ever got from that day. So if you think about that, it was almost 1,500 people who were totally obliterated on that day, including my husband. So what kind of weapon could do that?
Do you think there were planes?
From what I have seen of the ACARS information, and that's basically information that gets transmitted back to the air traffic control to say whether a plane is still in the air or not, those planes, the ones that they listed, 11, 175, 93, 77, none of them actually hit their target. I mean, this is computerized data with feedback from the planes to air traffic control that they were still in the air past the time which they should have, you know, ceased to exist, given the crashes and whatnot that we were told happened. I mean, I didn't immediately think that way. It took a long time going through the various, you know, groups that came through, architects and engineers. There were Pilots for Truth, Scholars for Truth, all these groups. And I did get a hold of Dr. Wood's book. And I was like, you know what? I have to reconsider what I saw that day. And then the information about the planes, you're like, you know, all the phone calls that were supposedly made by cell phones, you can't make a call now on a plane in the air.
I've got a friend who was in New York on the day. Mm-hmm. And I was at his house not too long. I mean, he's a South African, and I was at his house not too long ago, and I asked him, can you remember if you saw any airplanes? And he said, you know, I don't know anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, I believe John Lear talks about a lot of the technology that he was aware of that could have been used, and that could have been, they put in images. He said, they can put in images that offer noise, the right noise, you know, that you would think there was a plane coming, everything. They have such sophisticated technologies. And of course, again, going back to what I said about transparency, we know none of these things as citizens here. We find out after the fact when you looked at something later on, you know, like some of the fires that have occurred, and you go, that doesn't make any sense either. And I'm seeing cars that look like the ones that were, as Judy Wood has posited, were toasted, which makes no sense. There were cars like in, this one thing I saw was Lahaina fire. And there were two cars in just a grassy area. So there wasn't much other combustibles around. And these cars were basically toasted from the inside out. And one of the individuals that was filming was just touching the car, like the doorway, and it was crumbling into dust. So you're going, and, you know, and that hits me differently, maybe because I'm saying, oh, my God, they're still using it. And maybe domestically as well. You know, I have several family members who are in the military. Most of my husband's family came from military background. And, you know, you want them to be safe when they're over there and whatnot. But this happened right here. And you're like, this technology, I wouldn't want this used on anyone. It's not fair. It's so asymmetrical that nobody stands a chance with this kind of weaponry that is possibly being used here still and or elsewhere. It's horrifying. I mean, I'm horrified to have my husband and our name used in all the wars that came about after 9/11. I mean, I was on John Kerry's campaign to an extent. I did a lot of radio interviews and things like that. And, you know, you get set up with some, you know, individuals who, in protection of what Bush was doing, you know, they're out there to attack you when you're on the radio with them. And so they set me up against like a Gold Star mom who had lost her son. And I said, you know, I am so sorry for your loss. I totally, if anyone had ever asked me, I would have said, no, we shouldn't be going to war. It was a crime that occurred on 9/11, as far as I was concerned. And you don't punish a whole country for what a few people have done. You know, that's just not who I am. I mean, and nothing good came out of it. Nothing. Nothing good came out of those wars. I mean, except for we have more people who hate us beyond. I mean, it's just horrifying. And I'm horrified that our names are attached to this and that people think that they avenged my husband's death somehow. It's a nightmare. It never ends. It's just a nightmare that never ends. You know, my son moved across the country to get away from this. You know, the East Coast is so intense.
You wrote an open letter. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
To who and what was it about?
Well, there is a gentleman, Matt, I forget, Campbell. He lost his brother.
He's been on my show a couple times.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going about with a lawsuit to try to...
try to get the British government to reopen.
Accountable to some degree, right. And so, but part of the issue I had was, you know, they're in with the architects and engineer group. And I'm like, it's the thermite story, if you will, is, to my way of thinking, is fairly easy to disprove. Thermite explodes. You know, you've seen the welders, they have to wear those big masks and everything. And basically it looks, the sparking and everything else looks like that, except for if you can imagine on 110 story buildings, it would have taken, I've heard estimates of 29,000 cubic tons of thermite to take those buildings down. Now, surely we would have seen these buildings igniting in some crazy fashion. That just didn't happen. Plus, if you look at the injuries of the day of, you know, firefighters, responders, they weren't blinded. They didn't have, you know, extreme burns. Yes, there were burns, but it was a small percentage of the injuries that resulted that day. And I'm like, no, it just doesn't add up. Could some thermite have been in those buildings? I don't doubt that there was redundancy of some sort. I mean, if you are so intent on making sure there's the most damage possible being done, you know, you don't want any survivors if you can help it, then you use other things that are going to make it so, you know, if that fails, this works, you know, over and over again. Again, and if it was truly an explosive incendiary event, I believe we would have had more survivors at the bottoms of the buildings. Yes, there were like, I think 16 or so total. And they didn't report bombs and things like that. They basically got caught up in the floors falling. They were falling with floors, apparently, and stairwells. And they had injuries like broken ankles and things like that, but they weren't crushed. They came to and saw sunlight, because these 550 ton buildings that supposedly collapsed that day just were gone. They did not have rubble all over them. I mean, that's...
Did you go to Ground Zero?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was totally unrecognizable. There was an event in October with Hillary Clinton. She was a senator at the time. All these individuals, all these dignitaries. It was a madhouse of everyone trying to jockey for some kind of position there. And so we didn't even get into the ceremony. This was supposed to be for us and the rescue workers and whatnot. We had police barricade and we were not even permitted to get in. So I walked my son down the street, you know, because until then we kind of had, I had kind of said, you know, I don't want you watching television, you know, to why, because that's all was ever on our TVs. It was 24/7, the building's collapsing. And I'm like, this is not what my son needs to have in his mind all the time. So my son had been to those buildings several times. So I walked him down the street and there was a policeman outside the fencing surrounding Ground Zero. And I said, listen, I said, we can't get in to the ceremony that they're having. Is there any way my son could see what's happened here so that he has an understanding of why his father didn't come home that day? And the policeman opened up the gate that he was guarding, I suppose, and let us go in there. I can't even tell you, it was unrecognizable. And there wasn't this, there was a decent sized pile of rubble, but not what you would have expected from the height of those buildings coming down. I mean, you walked out, it was dizzying how tall those buildings were. I mean, it was like, they were like cities within cities. I mean, there was so much going on there. There was retails, restaurants, everything in these buildings. They were immense. And to find out that there was so little of them left, you know, basically, I believe my husband floated away, you know.
With the dust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, the medical examiner's office was doing the best they could with things. We had to go down to Ground Zero and give DNA, all those things that you do to identify a loved one. And there were times when I called just to follow up. And the medical examiner was like, listen, Giuliani's not letting us do much else with what we have. You know, it was bad news. The city didn't want that. So you couldn't have this constant barrage of victims being found, bad news all the time. Eventually, and I respectfully say they could have waited longer, there was more an impetus just to remove everything from Ground Zero. So basically, they destroyed a crime scene. And they scooped up what they had there. You know, they used the grapplers and they scooped up everything. And what was there was put in a landfill, a garbage dump. Now, in a crime scene of 3,000 Americans, as an American, I was so offended by that. You've put everything, everyone that might have been found in a landfill. It was just so shocking that this is how that crime was handled. And then as they were clearing... they wanted more access to certain areas, and they actually put roadways over what was there. In addition,
really?
to have heavy duty equipment be able to go through. And on top of that, they flooded the area. I don't know if that was to tamp down the, the toxins coming out of there. And also, they brought in truckloads and truckloads of dirt. Now, I'm thinking to myself, I mean, there are people buried here. And you're adding to the pile, it got referred to as the pile. You're obliterating any chance I have of recovering anything of my husband with everything that you're doing down there. It was not regarded with the reverence that you might have expected. It was not regarded as the crime that you might have expected. It was a massive cover-up, really was, of mega proportions beyond anything that I would ever have imagined.
Who was behind it? I'm guessing not that gray-haired Muslim in a cave in the Middle East somewhere with a Nokia 5310.
The 93 bombing, even that's a controversy. Basically, from my understanding, is the FBI more or less goaded a few individuals into doing that and providing them with the bombs. I mean, how crazy is this? And somehow, instead of fake bombs, they got real bombs. Are you kidding me? Seriously? And that was supposed to, I mean, I think 9/11 was in the planning for quite some time. And I think that was, could have been part and parcel of, oh, look, they hit us once, and then 9/11 comes. Oh, of course, they just came back to finish the job. What would be the impetus for that, to bring the level of our military to come down on your people, your country, that you couldn't possibly fight back in any equal terms? There's nobody that has the stuff that our nation has. I mean, we scare people, basically, and I can't imagine anybody in a foreign nation, especially that's worried about their own people, willing to bring that onto themselves. To what benefit? I mean, to just say, look, they bullied us one time, they'll bully us again.
Do you think that it was an Islamic attack?
I believe that there were patsies. I do. I believe, and that's why I believe Saudi Arabia is being normalized right now in our country, normalized in the fact that we have allowed them to invest in golf, all the sporting events, entertainment. They're trying to open their country up to some extent or another to look more approachable, more accessible. But the bottom line, it's still an absolute monarchy. And they'll, as is evidenced with the gentleman, Jamal Khashoggi, he was a Washington Post reporter. He got chopped up in D.C. somewhere, in a consulate office. I mean, they're not opposed to doing anything like that about their dissenters, But I believe there were patsies. I do believe, and that's why I think Saudi Arabia's, being normalized now, because they did their part. You know what I mean?
Horrifying. Building 7, it still blows my mind how few people know about Building 7.
Yeah, and that, you know what? And more people should know about that, because it held so many offices of, you know, the CIA. It was the it was Giuliani's emergency bunker.
DOD.
The SEC was in there. So, like, all the crimes of Enron and all of that, all the paperwork was in there. Guess what happened? It got destroyed. Conveniently enough, right? All these cases and FBI cases and whatnot, they were all that paperwork was gone. You know, apparently nobody did backup work back in the day, which is another, you know, ridiculous notion. But that building went down at 5:20. You had photographers and reporters saying, oh, you know, we hear reports that the Solomon building has collapsed. That was the BBC. And apparently the reporter just didn't realize the building was still standing behind her.
I remember seeing that.
And you go.
And I mean, Building 7, it fell in 7 seconds.
Right. The other two buildings came back down, I think, I don't know, 11, 12 seconds. I mean, we're talking the tallest buildings in the world in that amount of time. And people want to say it was a collapse. Well, I'm sorry. If this part of the building was attacked, there was still at least, you know, 80, if you know, floors below that were still well intact. That should, the any collapse, it should have been the top part of the buildings, not the whole of the buildings. And they felt like they too had lost all their integrity. Everything that was below, I mean, we're talking, you know, the firefighters even talk about it. There was nothing left, not a toilet, not a computer, not a desk.
Wait.
Go ahead.
There were passports.
Oh, yes. Miraculously. Oh, my Lord. You know, and even there were engine parts found of planes. I mean, John Lear, again, he said they weren't even the right engines.
So, yes, they were from a different aircraft.
Yeah, and you're just going, I mean, I think at this late date now that there's so much information that has been dismissed, you know, like ridiculous, what have you. But it's 25 years. It's almost like, who cares? So, you know, we put in, you know, lousy parts to cover up, but nobody's paying attention anymore.
If I'm following you correctly, Patricia, are you saying to this day, you still don't actually know what happened?
There is, after we withdrew from Afghanistan in, what was that, 2021, I think it was, fully, that was the last time you heard anybody talking about 9/11 as far as officially. Remember, we were like fighting terrorism. Well, terrorism apparently ended when we went into the Ukraine, you know, backing the Ukraine. I mean, it's like just a switch. So no one's talking about it. We've had, you know, family members, we've had several meetings. You know, every time a new administration comes in or a new level of Congress, you have to almost go and re-educate them. I mean, most of these people are young. They were children when it happened, if in fact some of them were even alive back in the day. You know, so you're saying, you know, we had this one meeting with some level of national security people. And, you know, to my way of thinking, I'm like, do any of you think it's reasonable that, you know, I guess, I don't know if it was 22 years later, what have you, that in this country, this land of the Constitution, all these laws that we have, no one has been fully prosecuted for 9/11. I said, tell me, and I said pointedly, I said, I want each one of you to say, is this what you would have expected from our country? legal system to not be able to prosecute anyone for the crimes of 9/11 successfully. There were plea deals. There's some plea deals out there. I mean, we still have, I don't know how many detainees left in Guantanamo Bay that now they want to stay there. They've kind of built their own little community over there, the detainees. I said, is this reasonable that we wouldn't have a prosecution? And they're like, I'm like, you. And they're like, no. I said, well, then please take this up as part of your legacy, that you're going to clarify what happened, you know, and give us some answers as to what happened down there. You only get answers in a courtroom, basically, from what I have seen.
Do you think that there is a lot of deliberate infiltration and confusion going on in the non-official narrative?
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think the purpose is, you know, to keep us spinning our wheels and looking for somebody, you know, the right people to come about and do the right things. And nothing's happened. It's 25 years. I mean, why can't we come up with a definitive idea of what happened, even amongst ourselves, you know, with these truth groups? They won't work together. I mean, that's just a ridiculous thing. I mean, you either want the truth or you don't.
Yeah.
And if you need to humble yourself, get rid of your ego, because what is this about you to carry on a cottage business? Well, then, I mean, that's ugly. I want the truth. That's all I want. I don't want anybody else walking in my shoes. I'm 64 years old. This is not about me. My ego is well quashed, you know, and I wish other people would feel that way, that you have grandchildren. Don't you want to see them grow up in a world where they feel safe? Or at least they have the transparency from their government to know exactly what they're capable of. I don't want military guys going overseas and getting hurt unnecessarily. I mean, the whole Iraq thing was a farce. You know, Colin Powell sitting there with a vial, supposedly, of anthrax and whatnot, telling us, you know, that at any moment, they're going to use weapons of mass destruction against our nation again. It was a farce. And then it's so insulting. You had Bush, I think, at there's some press dinner that the White House will, I guess, host annually. And he's making a farce out of it, like, oh, no, you know, he's at the podium. Oh, no weapons of mass destruction here. I'm like, thousands and thousands of people died. And you're making a joke of this. This is the president of the United States.
He's the same president who said, is our children learning?
Oi, oi. I mean, I had this one, I ran into former president of Ireland. It was a woman. And she goes, so how are things going? She knew. She had been in a congressional office, and we were going into one. So we eventually saw each other in leisure. So how are things going? I go, well, as you might understand, you know, you go to war with the government you have, not the one you want. You know what I mean? Or deserve, necessarily. And that's how it is. You know, I'm not right. I'm not left. I just want, you know, decent human beings running this country and, you know, not out there just total domination all the time. I just don't believe in it. I mean, I think, you know, if I look around at other people around me, none of us want this. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. Nobody wants to be in a constant state of apprehension and war and being the bad guy. You know, you can promote all you want that, you know, we promote democracy. Yeah, at the end of a gun, you know, does that really win friends? I don't think so. It doesn't make the world more peaceful.
Mm. Did you remarry?
No. I have a partner, you know, he's great. And, you know, we are very happy together, you know. I'm done.
And you...
That's it.
Your son now is in his 30s.
He is. He's in California. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You know, I've kept him out a lot, out from a lot of what I've been doing. I didn't want to, you know, put the responsibility of it all. I don't know if I did him a favor or not. I have no idea.
What does he think happened?
He thinks our government lied through it all. And the exact machinations, I don't know that he has dialed in on that as much as I have. I'm pretty sure not. You know, he's young. He's still trying to figure his life out. He has not fared very well with that. Like I said, my husband was his best friend. He feels very alone in this world. Because it's an experience that not many people have gone through. And, you know, I go to events with friends and it's like, you know, the trivial nature of conversation and stuff like that, it's really hard to deal in. The problems that people bring up, you know, and life goes on. I totally get that, but I feel very isolated. And I know my son does too, because you just look at things with a different perspective once you've been through something like this. You know, and my sister died in a car accident. Death happens. I get that. I don't have a corner on that market, you know, but this was beyond what most people go through. And I don't wish it on my worst enemy. I don't, you know, I don't have any enemies really, but... I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Do you think we'll ever know the truth?
I don't know. I really don't know. I always, you know, the families are in lawsuits with Saudi Arabia. And to my way of thinking, it's like, all right, Saudi Arabia, if you didn't have anything to do with this, you know, maybe you were forced to offer up some patsies, what have you, get mad and say it wasn't you. Or all of that. I mean, however many nations are in this world, we dragged everybody into our craziness, right, after 9/11. And push back. I would hope that eventually they'd be like, enough already. We're not going to partake in the business of war that you keep fomenting on us. It doesn't bode well for our country, you know, and push back. And I would have hoped we would have gotten more information that way, except for the fact I do believe... At some level, there's, you know, with COVID, you saw it. It's a global attack kind of on people from every country. You know, who in their right mind allowed all of that to happen? You know, so, you know, this is why I'm not real hopeful. It just seemed, but then, I don't know, maybe I look at COVID and I go, well, maybe they're, I don't know, were they panicked? feeling that they needed to do something like that to gain more control that they thought they were losing? I don't know. It's really hard to, for, you know, my lonely self to figure all that out. And there isn't really any one place for understanding that, that somebody is really filtering out all the garbage and giving you accurate information. Mm. You know, it's piecemeal. And yet these world events, you know, stuff that's happening over, you know, in the Middle East affects us here. And people don't still realize that. But I do think COVID opened up some people's eyes as to the possibility that there is something nefarious going on, and it's more directed at us than any, you know, as opposed to, say, you want to say it's an enemy of your country. That was done to all of us. I mean,
can you remember the last words that John said to you, and vice versa?
As I said, that I wasn't going in shock. I felt it go all over my body. But he just kept sobbing and sobbing. I love you. I love you. You know, it was total despair. Mm. And, you know, he was such an alive person, you know. Fully.
How long were you married?
13 years. Mm-hmm. And we were together 4 years before that, so 17.
High school sweethearts?
Not exactly. I met him in a disco.
a disco? A disco? You're showing your age.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. You know, and it was one of those kismet things. I told my girlfriend that I was with, I think he's the one, and he told his friend that he was with that I was the one. And, you know, was it a smooth road? Not exactly. We went through all the, you know, gyrations as any couple does when you first get together, you know, trying to figure out, you know, is this person really for me or not? You know, I think it's actually, I think if the truth comes out, it's going to be from a lot of foreign countries and what have you, and good people working together, you know, especially from the standpoint of 9/11 didn't happen in your country. You don't have a lot of, as much emotional connection to it all. And, you know, I'm so close to it. I can give you so many stories of what happened to us along the journey in D.C. and the like. But I do get caught up in the emotion of it all. And I appreciate you from a further, you know, you can step back from it and analyze it, you know, more thoroughly without throwing the emotional component in there that will only maybe distract from getting to the facts of what happened. I think the truth, if it's going to happen, will come from outside the United States, not necessarily within. There's too many people that have worked to... worked with the government, worked in different political parties, they're with different corporations, and there's so many intertwined people with covering up what happened. You know, you can't have this job without saying that you weren't part and parcel of working with bad people. You know what I mean? The corporations are so involved. The government so involved, contracts that come from the government are so involved, that we're too many people are inex- inextricably tied to all of the actors that could have been involved in 9/11, that I don't think you could separate them and discern a good guy from the bad guy at this point. There's so many overlapping dependencies, you know, jobs and things like that, that people have taken. We have a ton of military people in this country. I don't think any one of them wants to think that they were duped into a war. And they, you know, they have to have a mindset to feel that they're doing, they were doing the right thing. And so they stay safe. You know what I mean? So I think we're way too close to the event here. So that's where my hope is from people from the outside of the United States will, you know, get to the truth. That's why one of the things with the Jeff Campbell's family, I was hoping that they would look at more and more factors from other groups like Judy Wood and, you know, Mark Conlon and the Planes and things like that, so that any suit that the family would bring would have more evidence rather than, you know, relying on the story that we were all told. That was my intent, is hope that they would look at for the whole truth, not just one that furthered their suit along in some fashion. And I realize it's hard because it's like there's so much resistance out there.
Patricia, thank you for your story, and thank you for joining me in the trenches.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.